Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Creditability of Tax Credits Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 20th, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in PPL Corporation Subsidiaries v. Commissioner of Internal Revenue. The case considered whether, in determining the creditability of a foreign tax, meaning the extent to which a U.S. company paying the foreign tax can claim a corresponding credit against its U.S. taxes, courts can and should take account of the practical operation and intended effect of the foreign tax. In an opinion delivered by Justice Thomas, the court held unanimously that the foreign tax was creditable against federal income taxes. Justice Sotomayor filed a concurring opinion. To discuss the case, we have Christina Sandifer, who is a staff attorney at the Goldwater Institute's Sharp Norton Center for Constitutional Litigation. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Sandifer.
Hi there. My name is Christina Sandifer, and I'm an attorney at the Goldwater Institute. A little bit about the Goldwater Institute. We are a nonprofit organization that advances individual liberty and defends the Constitution through public policy and litigation. The Institute joined the United States Chamber of Commerce and the Cato Institute in this case in an amicus brief in support of the petitioner, PPL. On May 20th, the Supreme Court held that privatized companies who had to pay a one-time excess profits tax to the United Kingdom in 1997 could credit the amount of that payment against their United States income taxes. Now, the UK tax, according to the Supreme Court, falls under Section 901 of the Internal Revenue Code, and that says that any foreign tax that is taxing income, warp, or excess profits is going to be creditable against United States income taxes. So, in other words, the companies that paid the tax to the United Kingdom do not also have to turn around and pay it to the United States. This is sort of to prevent against double taxation. Now, for those who may not have been following the case closely, I'll give you a little bit of background, and then we can discuss the decision in more detail. In the 1980s, British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher implemented a wide-scale policy of privatization, and during that time, state-owned companies and nationalized industries were sold off to private investors. The value of that sale was based on what they call a float value, or in other words, the value that the public would pay if the shares for the company were floated on a public stock exchange. One of the companies was Southwestern Electricity, involved in this case. It was purchased by an American company, PPL Corporation, in 1996. Now, after these sales, many of the former state-owned companies, including Southwestern, operated much more efficiently as private businesses instead of as government businesses, and as a result, they earned profits to reflect this efficiency, and those profits exceeded the United Kingdom's expectations. So when the Labour Party came into power in the 1990s, it resolved to tax away these so-called excess profits. Again, the company saw these profits as a result of efficiency gained through privatization, but the United Kingdom viewed the additional income as windfalls that were caused by the government undervaluing the formerly state-owned companies when they were sold. And that's basically how the UK calculated the tax. So in 1997, the United Kingdom billed Southwestern $140 million for excess profits that were earned, and PPL, the parent company, then claimed a credit for its share of the bill on its 1997 U.S. federal income tax return. Again, it did this because the Internal Revenue Code says that income or profits and excess profits taxes paid to foreign governments can be credited against U.S. income taxes. The Treasury Department has interpreted this law to apply to taxes whose predominant character is that of an income tax in the U.S. sense. So that is what PPL argued was the case here. But the IRS said that PPL was not entitled to claim that credit, and they went to court, and the Third Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with the IRS. Now, the Supreme Court agreed to hear this case to determine whether an American taxpayer who has paid the United Kingdom's excess profit tax may credit that tax against its United States tax liability to avoid being subject to double taxation. Sections 901 and 902 of the Internal Revenue Code allow American corporations to claim tax credits equal to their share of foreign taxes paid by their subsidiaries. They essentially protect the American corporation from being subject to double taxation. Now, this is difficult because, unlike many other countries, the United States requires American taxpayers to pay taxes on income earned outside the United States, but of course, income taxes in other countries don't exactly comport with United States income taxes. So it's a little difficult to determine which taxes are income taxes and which are not. The Internal Revenue Code says a tax is creditable against domestic taxes if the foreign tax paid is income, war profits, or excess profits. Now, courts that have tried to determine this in the past have consistently held that the substance and not the form of the foreign tax should guide the interpretation of whether the foreign tax is creditable. So this is because, again, it's difficult, if not impossible, to harmonize foreign taxes with the United States Internal Revenue Code. So under a substance-based approach, a court would consider whether the nature of the foreign tax paid likens it to an income, war profits, or excess profits tax. Now, if the court were to take a form-based approach, then they would look only to the specific terminology of the foreign tax, with considering how it operates in practice. And according to Treasury regulations, a foreign tax is an income, war profits, or excess profits tax if the predominant character of that tax is that of an income tax in the U.S. sense. The case was argued before the Supreme Court back in February, and the justices and attorneys did spend quite a bit of time grappling with this complex formula for calculating the tax. PPL argued that the tax was assessed on profits that were earned by these privatized companies, and therefore the tax was creditable against United States income tax. It urged the court not to take the formalistic approach that the Third Circuit had taken, which led that court to determine that the excess profits tax is not creditable. PPL, though, maintained that a long line of cases dating back to the 1932 United States Supreme Court case of Biddle versus Commissioner and continuing all the way up into the 1980s supports this substance or over form approach. So if you take that approach, the excess profits tax, even though it has quite technical language, is in substance, is in application, a tax that's assessed on profits earned by the privatized companies over a specific period of time, and therefore it's an income tax. But the IRS came back and said that the tax was simply a means to capture the unanticipated value of these companies. In other words, they were sold at a specific price. It's tough to value a company when it's state-owned. It was sold off and privatized, and those companies then ended up being worth quite a bit more than the United Kingdom expected, and hence the excess profits or windfall tax. The IRS said that wrangling over the form versus substance approach is irrelevant because under either analysis, the tax just isn't an income tax at all. It's just a tax based on the value of the privatized companies. But PPL in oral argument did point out that the valuation formula that is relied upon by the IRS in calculating this tax is almost exclusively relying on a company's income, and therefore it is in fact an excess profits tax that falls under the Internal Revenue Code and does not subject the company to double taxation. Now, a few weeks ago, the Supreme Court returned a unanimous decision in favor of PPL. Justice Thomas wrote the opinion for the court, which reversed the judgment of the Third Circuit and held that the UK excess profits tax is in fact creditable against US income taxes under Section 901 of the Internal Revenue Code. Justice Sotomayor filed a concurring opinion in that case. Now let's talk a bit about the majority opinion. Justice Thomas announced that the court will use a, quote, common sense approach, end quote, to determine whether a foreign tax is creditable against U.S. income taxes. So this is sort of like the substance-based approach that we've been talking about earlier. Under this analysis, PPL could credit its excess profits tax against its U.S. tax liability because the court agreed with PPL that the predominant character of that tax is that of an income tax in the U.S. sense, which is the terminology of the Treasury regulation. Now, employing this common sense approach, Justice Thomas examined the historical context of this tax. We talked about that a little bit earlier. In his opinion, Thomas noted that when the companies were first privatized, many of them weren't even allowed to change their prices for several years. So in order to compete against each other and to compete for profits, they had to be more efficient in other ways besides adjusting prices. So companies, in order to profit and in order to do well, substantially increased their efficiency, and thus they were able to earn many more profits than they did when they were owned by the state and didn't need to compete. It was those profits that the UK taxed. So applying the Treasury's interpreting rule within this context in a common sense way, Justice Thomas asked the question, if that tax had been levied in the United States, would it be considered an income tax under the Internal Revenue Code? And the court's conclusion here was yes. The Treasury regulation, as we discussed, says that one must look at the predominant character of the tax. In his opinion, Justice Thomas said, a common sense approach considers the normal manner in which a tax applies, even if it does not affect every taxpayer like an income tax. And that's interesting, because in the case of one company, for example, the excess profits tax actually ended up taxing away more than the company's total profits. In fact, it taxed away almost double the company's total profits. Now, when we think about income taxes, they don't typically seize all of one's income, even though sometimes it seems like they come close, but they don't typically do that, and they definitely don't typically require payments equal to more than one's income. But because the tax was levied on profit, and because it applied like an income tax for the majority of the companies, the court said that it's an income tax in the U.S. sense. Now, because of this issue, Justice Sotomayor wrote separately to address the anomalous situation like the one we just discussed, where a tax does not function like an income tax for a few of the taxpayers. There's an amicus brief filed in this case by law tax professors, and it honed in on this very issue. That brief argued that the tax must operate like an income tax in all cases, or it shouldn't be considered an income tax for anyone for purposes of creditability. Justice Sotomayor was interested in exploring this issue further, and it seemed both during oral argument and in her concurring opinion like she might tend to agree more with the amicus brief filed by the professors. But Justice Sotomayor said that she found it imprudent to consider the issue at this time since it wasn't raised, and in fact it wasn't even really supported by the IRS, and it would be an issue of first impression for the court. So a resolution of that issue will be saved for a later date. Although the opinion defers issues to be decided in future cases, the decision here is important because it does clarify the standard for determining what will be considered a creditable tax. Again, courts must employ a common sense approach. The precise formula for calculating the tax is not going to be determinative of whether or not that tax is creditable. Now here, because the tax is based on income, companies could credit it against their U.S. income taxes. The tax functioned like an income tax and therefore was creditable. So while the tax in this case was a one-time foreign tax credit, which really isn't directly relevant to many American taxpayers, the decision has far broader significance. First, it brought a little more common sense to the world of income taxes. And down the road, it could actually be worth billions of dollars in savings for companies that are subject to foreign income taxes who will not be subject to double taxation, both in the foreign country and here in the United States.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.